I'm Corey Novotny.
I'm Brian Wells.
And you're listening to He's Done It, a mostly sports podcast. So I was just telling you, like, right before we came on, I've been getting killed by allergies this year. And it's not something, like, ever has been a problem for me since moving to North Carolina. All of a sudden, I moved to downtown Raleigh, where there's, I feel like, less trees and less plants and stuff. And I've never had to take Allegra before. I'm wearing a nose strip right now. I don't know if you can tell. Like, this is so bad.
I can't tell.
Yeah.
I didn't notice that.
It's clear. So I guess that works. But yeah, it's been rough for me. So I want to apologize in advance if I sound a little nasally. Hopefully it doesn't totally ruin anything. I think I'm still like consciously there, but my nose has just been running constantly for the past few days, and it sucks. Like I don't like allergies at all.
Oh yeah. Anytime I have allergies, yeah, it's endless Allegra or Benadryl, you name it.
Right. I took Benadryl for the first time ever last night to try to help me fall asleep. It's crazy.
Yeah, I've had some allergies, but I've had it way worse other years.
I feel like it's also early in New England, right?
That too, yeah. So it's still freaking cold out, which I hate. I can't stand that it's already almost April and it's still like, what, 30 to 40 degrees?
Yeah.
It's not even spring weather. It doesn't feel like spring whatsoever.
Yeah, I saw like out west and into the Midwest, they were getting like 2 feet of snow this week. Seems like New Hampshire at least has not been getting hit with a ton of snow, even though it's been cold.
It had one day of snow, and it wasn't that much. It was just a couple inches at most, not even.
Yeah, that's not too bad. So one thing that I've kind of thought over the years, and I don't know if I'm just kind of convincing myself this, is that when you kind of go to a different climate, you either are going to start having allergies if you never had them before, or you're going to stop having them if you normally do. I don't know if you've heard that before. It seems like kind of a good theory.
No,
right. So I'm hoping that by the time I'm out west in a few days, that I'm just going to be miraculously feeling completely normal again. But again, that might just be wishful thinking, and I'm just going to be feeling miserable for the time being, because I know that, you know, even though it's out in the desert, Las Vegas still apparently has pollen and stuff, so.
That sucks. Yeah. Well, I could tell a little bit, like I mentioned to you earlier, but I don't think it's egregiously bad.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like I told you, SpongeBob with the suds. I'm sick, Patrick. I'm going to the doctors.
Yeah.
It's
no, I've definitely been there before, so that's good. And I guess, like, just kind of a programming note, little transition here. So next week, I'm hoping I'll be able to do an episode of He's Done It. It'd have to be later in the week. We'll have to see how things work with our schedule, whether we'll do one right before the Final Four or have to wait until after. But I am definitely going to be on an episode of Affable Chat where we'll be reviewing Ocean's 11. So that is something that listeners can look forward to.
I love Ocean's 11.
Yeah, it's a very fun movie.
12 is okay. 13 I liked a little bit more than 12, but Ocean's 11 is definitely the best of the three.
So I haven't seen either 12 or 13, but watching Ocean's 11 again makes me like want to continue with those two movies. So
you should still watch them. They're not... Again, not as good as 11, but they're still worth watching.
Right. No, few sequels are. So, and that's something that I've heard is like, it's definitely a drop off, but I think it's fun. Like, you have a great cast. It's, you know, I don't want to go give too much away for my full thoughts on the movie, but definitely enjoyed reviewing that with our good friend Benjamin Carlson. And yeah, so that at the very least, you'll have that sometime early next week. I think probably like Tuesday is when he's thinking it'll be available, but.
That's good. I enjoyed when we did that top five Vegas movies.
Right.
I would still have it in the top five.
Yes. Oh, yeah. I can say for sure that on the second watch, it definitely didn't fall out of my top five. So,
yeah.
I don't remember if I had it three or four last time, but it's certainly in that range for me still. So,
same.
But anyway, let's jump into this here. So March Madness opening weekend is in the books, and some brackets are busted. I think yours is more than mine.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Luckily, I think starting from now on, well, I did it this year, but I will do it even more so in future years. Is that I am not a one bracket guy. I will say which one's my main bracket, mm-hmm. but not a one bracket guy because like other brackets still look kind of good, but I know that main one doesn't look. I know it doesn't look good at all, but
right, the one in this pool that our listeners are most familiar with.
Exactly. Yeah.
You still have your champion alive, so that's good.
you laugh, but what's funny is that I remember in high school, or late high school, I was in a pool where a bunch of people, and one guy, his bracket was so bad. Oh, it was actually freshman year.
Mm-hmm.
It was the year where UConn won it all as a 7 seed.
In 2014.
I remember in that pool, the person that won, his bracket, it was just so, it was X everywhere. It was wrong, anywhere you looked, but it had one long green
just
line.
UConn winning it all.
He picked UConn to win it all. It's like, wow, as long as you got the winner. Right. And for whatever reason in our pool, that specific pool, there's only a few people that pick UConn, so I'll take it. I'll take the bronze medal if that is even possible at this point.
Yeah, I know. I think everyone just tried to get too cute and too smart with it, thinking, oh, everyone's just gonna pick UConn, and then that's how you end up with more than double the people who picked UConn picked North Carolina. So now I'm just competing with so many others. And that's how whenever North Carolina wins, I either come in first or I come in third because I have a terrible bracket, but they still win the whole thing. So
yeah, for other brackets that I made, I went chalk, but I got too cute with UConn out early. Well, this one's the opposite where I try to pick upsets everywhere, but have UConn still repeat.
Right. And it is... it's a combination of trying to pick too many upsets and then also happening to pick the two teams who got upset in our case. So before we get too close into that, I think a lot of people, it seems like, are not satisfied with the opening weekend. Too many blowouts, not enough upsets. I personally get where they're coming from, but love that the Sweet 16 is looking way more competitive. Like last year, it's all fun and games, you have all these upsets, and then you get to the Final Four, you're like, who even are these teams that are still alive? Yeah. This isn't interesting.
No, I agree. I love upsets, even if it goes against my bracket. I don't care. I love when upsets happen. Like the St. Peter's, like that was great. I had obviously Kentucky in that matchup, but then I had Murray State in the Sweet 16, and I had Purdue in the Elite Eight and beyond, and St. Peter's won all those games, and I did not care. So I love upsets, so I totally understand where people are coming from, where there wasn't enough chaos, even though there was some, for sure.
A little bit, yeah.
But at the same time, like what you said, I totally agree that when you look at the Sweet 16, every single matchup, I could say... maybe UConn over San Diego State.
It's a national championship game rematch.
Right, it's a national championship rematch. So that's the best, that's the widest spread of the eight games remaining. Like what you said, I think that, I like that we have a more competitive, Sweet 16 and beyond, and we might get a better, more entertaining Final Four. I mean, it's probably too much to ask of a Final Four of what we had 2 years ago, where it was
just
Duke,
blue
North Carolina, Villanova, all the studs, all the best of the best. So that might be a little bit too hard to ask for, but it looks like we'll get a better Final Four than what we had last year.
Right, which I think in the end is worth it. You know, maybe it would have been nice if you had an extra upset or two, but even like if you look at a game like Houston, Texas A&M, that was a crazy finish. You had the one seed on the ropes, it goes to overtime, and then the one seed ends up winning.
1 second left remaining. Oh, there's no way they can tie this. Puts up the shot, and it goes in.
Yeah, so I guess, you know, one comment in terms of my bracket, it's been weird this year for me, because normally I have like a decent bracket, but I lose like a Final Four team on the first day, and I'll lose a couple of Elite Eight and Sweet 16 teams, and my bracket just feels devastated. This year, at least my main bracket in this pool, I had, you know, I lost a Final Four team in the first round. I lost a couple of Elite Eight and Sweet 16 teams. The others did as well. I just, like, all of the toss-up games, I got wrong. It occurred to me in the 8-9, 7-10, and 6-11 games, matchups, in our He's Done It pool, my combined record was 0-12.
Wow.
Like, just all these games, it's like I had most of those teams losing in the second round anyway, but I couldn't get any of them right. I've never done anything like that before. It's like the games are 50-50. You think you'll at least go 50-50. 0-12. Like, that's so difficult to do, and I managed to do it somehow. So.
Yeah, the basketball gods. Sometimes you look at them and think, why me?
Right. It's like, I love March Madness. It's still so much fun. But I every year I realize I hate this tournament because I just make these picks and I'm like, now I'm rooting against things and just doesn't go in my favor and takes a toll on you.
Which again is why I just can't do one bracket anymore.
Right. You have to
have
to be
a one bracket guy, but nope, I can't do anymore. There's way too much unpredictability. It's too much where it's like, all right, well, There goes my main team. I got to root for other things.
Yeah. Same.
And luck.
I fill out so two with money and then a bunch of others. I'll just fill out just like, yeah, let's see how this goes. Just trying to do a bunch of different combinations. My best bracket is Creighton winning the whole thing. So them surviving on Saturday night against Oregon was definitely big for me in that one. But still, like, that has no chance because you're competing against millions of people or brackets at least throughout the world. So just yeah, I mean, I agree, though. You got to have multiple brackets that have stakes and just hope one of them, you nail the combinations together, which is hard because a lot of times you mix and match and you just end up with three mediocre brackets instead of one really good one.
Which is the current case for me right now.
Yeah.
Because even my main one's the worst one for sure, though. But yeah. I have other ones that are like I mean,
slightly
we'll
better,
see what happens.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Uh-huh. Slightly better, but still not great.
Right. I totally understand that. So anyway, I think just looking at this weekend, so other than just how things played out, the two biggest storylines from the first round were Oakland taking down Kentucky, Yale taking down Auburn. Rough go of it for the SEC, but I think those two games are at least, we got some chaos with both of those. So.
Yeah, exactly, which is why I'm not too disappointed. I'm not really that disappointed in the first weekend. I'm always going to enjoy college basketball. And yes, there was less chaos than typical years, but there was still enough chaos where you could still look at March Madness and think like, wow, this is still a great tournament to invest in, even though you look like an idiot after some of these games. certainly I do. But it's still an entertaining product, even though you look like an idiot after some of these games.
Right, and I did say last week that I wasn't picking Kentucky to go to the Final Four because I got burned by St. Peter's 2 years ago, and I hated being on the wrong side of that upset. So I was like, I was very much caught up with Jack Golke and Oakland, and it was a fun story. That's crazy to me how this guy walks off the court and instantly has like seven NIL deals, which that is how NIL should work, in my opinion. I love that for him. But
yeah, comes off the bench, hits 10 threes, and now he's got Buffalo Wild Wings and all the
TurboTax. Yeah, right.
TurboTax.
I think he's like, oh, now that my college has...
That TurboTax ad, like he's just in his outside of his hotel
in the
room.
Lobby.
He's just pretending to shoot up a shot in the lobby.
Yes, let's just get a video of you just kind of talk. It is like he became a legend, and I wish he had a longer run. It was a tough loss for Oakland against NC State. A lot of my friends here in Raleigh were happy about that. I think I was the one who wished that Oakland's run could continue, but it's a cool story. It's fun when you have at least one of those guys. Everyone's going to remember Jack Golke. You know, we talk about his stat line in our group. I love it. All he does is shoot threes.
Oh,
all
yeah.
I did was shoot threes.
335 3-point attempts this year, and only eight of them were
two-point
yeah, shots.
Right. Just never goes inside the arc. No
love
point.
It.
Yeah.
That's truly living and dying by the three.
Right.
I love how he said after the game that, yeah, you know, Kentucky, they got lottery picks, and I'm now going to be in the NBA. And I'm thinking, hold on. Eric Spoelstra is probably already drawing a place for you, man.
Right. It's just, you know, it's all fun and games until 2 years from now when he's scoring 27 as Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown are just staring on the bench with the Celtics down 12 in the game 6 of the Eastern Conference Finals.
Like, and we're bitching about how the fuck are we losing to that
right,
guy.
Yeah, just... I would... Maybe some team will like bring him into the summer league just to let him get a run.
Yeah, just to see what he's got, and then probably
he's in the Horizon League for a reason. But it's a cool story when you get a guy go from D2 basketball to shining on March Madness stage, and on the other side, Kentucky and Coach Cal, they're still together. I often get very torn when it comes to coaches in this situation where everyone is like, they should be fired, they're underachieving, all this stuff. Because I'm like, yes, at the unbiased level, I agree. But as someone who doesn't like Kentucky basketball and Coach John Calipari, I like the idea of these two just continuing to toy with the idea like, oh, he can still he can still do it. He's still one of the best coaches, even though it's pretty clear the game has passed him by. And he just can't win with these one-and-done guys like you used to a decade ago.
Yeah, Corey, you were talking about how much you don't like Kentucky last week. I got to tell you, I think I have a new least favorite team. and new least favorite coach in Calipari and... Yeah, it's pretty clear that the one and done thing is annoying and it doesn't work, even when you have the talent. And I'm not saying what he said after the game where he talked about how, hey, like the players that we have didn't play up to the level that they're capable of typically. And I'm not saying what he said after the game was wrong, but at the same time, it's like, oh, it's just deflecting the blame on the players and not yourself when...
Yep.
Not a lot of great in-game adjustments. I feel like he took his timeouts way too late, and their offense was so stagnant. Like, there's just barely any ball movement. Anytime there was ball movement on Kentucky's offense, it was a lot of their backcourt just like, you take it, no, you take it, and then by the time the shot clock is over, like they're already like giving the ball away to their team. And
right.
Look, Oakland shot, I mean, especially Gulkey, shot lights out, even though they sucked at the free throw line. They were crazy behind the arc. So a lot of it has to do with Oakland and how they played. But I also look at Kentucky and think like, wow, like this is such a brutal offense to watch. It's much worse than I expected. And yeah,
it was like they just showed up to the court being like, yeah, we're better than Oakland. They had no idea what this team is capable of. It just didn't play a game.
Like, yeah, we got all the talent, but then you get to the moment of the NCAA tournament and the stage is too big for them.
Right. And say like, you know, Reed Sheppard and Rob Dillingham are going to be lottery picks. They're going to be great NBA players. And they're just going to be another guys in the line of your Jamal Murray's, your Shai Gilgeous-Alexander's, your Bam Adebayo's. Like all these guys who never even made a Final Four. They're great NBA players. Like, yeah, that's cool. But I'm sure Kentucky fans kind of get tired of being like, yeah, wait, why couldn't they win like this when we had them in college?
Yeah, ever since, I know it's completely different teams, completely different rosters, but ever since that 2015 Final Four run where they lost to Wisconsin, they haven't been the same since. And, I mean, Calipari has one title win. It's only because, Anthony Davis had a growth spurt. That's
right. he was so good at getting those great freshmen to put things together. I mean, that 2015 team was loaded with the best freshmen in the country.
Devin Booker was on the bench. He's one of the best players in the league.
Right,
NBA. Yeah.
Karl Anthony Towns, he was the number one overall pick. That team was loaded, and they went, 38-1? They just happened to have the one loss occur in the national semifinals. Doesn't necessarily take away from how great the season was, but it's also... they've just been downhill since that point. I mean, it's no surprise that if you look at this game, the one Kentucky player who truly showed up and put on a great performance was Antonio Reeves, who was a senior.
Yeah, he was great.
Like they would have
been blown out if it weren't for him.
Right, and it's just I understand the idea that it's like 24-year-olds shouldn't be playing college basketball. Like I kind of get people who have those qualms. Yes, but
Gulkey would have something to say about that too.
Right, right. Well, he is 24 years old, and you know I think a lot of it is a COVID year. A lot of guys are just got an extra year because they just happen to be in college in 2020-21 season, even if they played anyway. But when it comes down to it, these 18-19-year-olds are going up against grown men, and in this case
just because they're more talented and will be better NBA players, that doesn't mean that they make for better college players.
Right.
And Corey, you were talking about like all those past guys at Kentucky and how like Adebayo and Towns, Booker, who else are you naming?
Yeah, Jamal Murray, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander,
Murray,
Malik Monk,
SGA. Yeah, a lot of great players to come out from Kentucky. But I will say like the Reed Sheppard, That guy sucks. He had the worst game ever.
He did not play well in this game.
Well, he was so bad.
So
I don't know about that guy.
Well, his dad was a legend at Kentucky. I don't know what his NBA career was like. I think he's the National Freshman Player of the Year. He just didn't show up in this game. It's like there's literally the lights are too bright for this guy. I think he is going to still be good, but I mean, this is your only time seeing him.
His draft stock had to have taken a hit.
I understand that thought, yeah.
He didn't look like an NBA caliber player whatsoever in that game.
I'll also say that this year, I don't think I've ever been less plugged in to NBA drafts than ever. Because I don't know who the number one overall pick is. Yeah, right, because
there's no Wembanyama. There's no Towns, Anthony Davis, there's no Anthony Edwards.
Right, there's no guy that you're like, oh yeah, he's the best player, like he's gonna go number one overall. I don't know.
There's no Paolo. Yeah, there are a lot of, like, you just shrug and I don't know, maybe him.
I've seen some like mock drafts where like three of the top five guys.
It's a bunch of foreign guys.
Yeah, they're all international. Yeah, right. So it's just not the same. I think
I agree.
Yeah. I couldn't really tell you. I've just heard that Shepard and Dillingham, like, I've seen mock drafts. There's still 3 months to go. In the end, none of them are probably going to play for our team unless some crazy trade happens or something. But it's, yeah. I mean, the reality is just within the context of March Madness, these guys, the biggest game of their college career, did not show up, and now they're going to trot off to the NBA, and Coach Cal is going to be trying to do it again next year and try to avoid another embarrassing first-round loss.
So. Yeah, I don't – even though I picked them to go on a deep run, this did not surprise me at all.
No, it didn't surprise me either. That was one of those things where it's like, I thought Kentucky was either going to get bounced early or go on a deep run.
I took the chance that they'd go on a deep run, but am I surprised? We'll get to other games where I was certainly surprised by, but this one, no, I wasn't surprised at all.
Yeah, I mean, it is very funny that there were two teams who greatly disappointed when they're upset, and Kentucky just happened to be one of them. So
yeah,
the other one, Auburn. I was frustrated by that just because I bought into that team. And I'm like, I don't necessarily understand what happened there. But every now and then, you just get these teams that they ride hot through conference tournament, and then they show up to the NCAAs, and they just are not the same team at all. And that happened to be Auburn.
Auburn was a team that everybody bought into. Like, not just me or you or whatever. Or like, guys that really follow the sport.
Right.
Really bought into them, and I still don't regret. See, that's when I don't regret picking, unlike Kentucky. But I am surprised that they lost to Yale. Even in the game, they were up 10, 7.5 minutes left to go, and they go 2-for-7 from the free throw line and commit 6 turnovers.
Just really bad basketball.
And then they get there, and then Yale, they play in the next game, and they get blown out by
San Diego State. Competitive from start to finish. Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm thinking, wow, I don't even look at Yale. I'm like, wow, that was such an impressive win by them. I'm like, no, I look at Auburn way more.
Just a terrible loss, yeah.
Yeah.
Right, and it's, look, I made the bold call of putting Auburn to upset UConn and go to the Final Four. That's on me, but it's also something a lot of people are like, yeah, if they played any other team, I'd probably pick them, but they're going up against UConn. So it is something that they definitely destroyed a ton of brackets, just like Kentucky did. So that was a tough loss in the moment, but it's one of those things where, like, I can appreciate upsets for the most part. Ivy League teams busting my bracket does not hit the same. I know they're mid-major, but come on. That's the thing with Princeton last year. Like, I get it. Oh, 15 seed, Sweet 16, very fun. I mean, do we know the players that we're talking about and rooting for right now? Like, let's take a step back here and talk about these Ivy League teams. So they definitely are going to do a lot of great things in this world. They're not going to go pro in the NBA, but they're, you know, they're not some pesky underdogs that we really need to be rooting for in March just because they're 13th.
Oh, I totally agree. It's not like St. Peter's.
Right.
Or Oakland if they went for Loyola Chicago.
Oral Roberts,
Oral Roberts, yeah. Florida Gulf Coast.
Right. It's very, very different. Although, kind of on the topic now that you say that. So I think this is San Diego State's fourth time advancing to the Sweet 16. So, meaning to get to the Sweet 16, they've played 8 games in their program's history. Also, it's 2011, I think. So when Kawhi Leonard was there, they just became this like actual legitimate program running the Mountain West, the only one to survive the first weekend in a controversial conference. And of those eight victories, seven have come over against a double digit seed. They just keep getting lucky, and they, you know, you have an Auburn gets bounced by Yale, and then they just blow out Yale. That's what just keeps happening with this team. And they actually lost to Florida Gulf Coast, the 15 seed. Otherwise, it could have been 9.
I do remember that. Yep. Yeah.
So that they just keep getting lucky with these paths. And last year, they get a big one
last
over Alabama.
Last year, they took advantage of it. They actually had a tough road where they faced Alabama, Creighton,
right,
Florida Gulf Coast. And then made it Florida a little Atlantic, bit competitive with UConn. Or, yes. Excuse me, Florida Atlantic. Thank you. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. But it is like very interesting seeing that as like, oh, like they just keep surviving because, you know, some other, they just happen to be the one team in the Mountain West that is just viewed as better than everybody else for whatever reason. And they just kind of get lucky with how the bracket unfolds. So I am curious to see what they can do against UConn, but yeah, I mean, I'm sure it'll be similar to last year where maybe things are competitive a little bit, but they don't really stand a chance. UConn is rolling right now.
Yeah. To the point where you got Mike Greenberg thinking that they'd be a playoff team in the Eastern Conference.
That's the dumbest take I've ever seen. Because like,
the journalism is dead now.
Greeny is the worst. I can't stand him.
I used to like him when it was him and Golic and they had the radio show.
Yeah, right.
In the
they secretly
like,
hated each other.
Yeah, by the end. But I don't know. He just throws out hot takes on GetUp,
right?
And he's not alone. It's just bad. It's just bad commentary.
Yeah,
I'm certainly not going to act. I've said this plenty of times in the past. Surely not going to act like a college basketball expert, but I'm not going to make a take like that.
Everyone knows just, that even like the greatest college basketball teams ever wouldn't be able to compete with the worst NBA teams, because the NBA, I mean, the closest you can come up with would probably be that 2015 Kentucky team against the 2015 Philadelphia 76ers. Like that maybe could be a competitive game where you have basically G League guys going up against future lottery picks, but they don't have a roster top to bottom that can compete. UConn has a handful of guys who might go to the NBA, but it's not like you're looking at this team and it's just, oh, the top seven picks on the draft, three of them are on UConn's roster. That's not how this team is built. It's just silly.
Maybe Alabama football versus the worst team. I'm trying to think of something. I don't even know about that.
Because you get like 11 of the guys on the, I guess, you know, it, you also can look at it in the sense, okay, it's like every year they're pumping out new players, even like freshmen and sophomores, some of them will go to the NFL, but it's unrealistic to think that these guys can compete with actual professional players, because most of the players on the team will not go pro. They are not NFL players, they're not NBA players. And UConn is just, it's ridiculous take. Like, he's just salty that they blew out Northwestern, where he went to school.
Yeah, he blew up his school team.
Yeah, right. Which, say, Dusty May, I don't know if I want to say he was coaching with 1 foot out the door, but him leaving literally the next day to take the Michigan job was the least surprising news I've seen. And something didn't even occur to me. It's like, oh yeah, Florida Atlantic might not win because their coach is not going to be there as the second his team loses.
Correct me if I'm wrong, Corey, but last year they played Memphis in the first round, it was a very tight ball game. That wasn't the part I wanted you to correct me on. The part where didn't Memphis, the refs awarded them award them a timeout or something?
Right. I forget exactly how it played out. I think it could have been a timeout and they called it a jump ball instead.
Right. And then Florida Atlantic gets the ball and they score and they win. And because of that, they went on a run to the Final Four. And I'm basically trying to say is, wow, if the refs didn't screw up there, would Dusty May even be on Michigan right now? It's kind of wild to think about.
That is a good question, because he did have a great regular season last year. I think Florida Atlantic was like 28-3 or something like that.
Yeah,
so
that sounds right. I'm shocked that they were this bad, and I certainly didn't take this season seriously enough where I wanted to be the contrarian and say I still believe in Florida Atlantic compared to the public, but man, 20 turnovers in that game,
yeah,
and they deserved
so
to lose
bad.
That game.
Yeah,
because the refs actually helped Florida Atlantic in that game. There was a terrible game start to finish on the refs, but like for both sides. But they were screwing Northwestern even more to the point where Florida Atlantic almost won because of them. And
right,
and then they didn't. Northwestern ties a game and completely destroys them in overtime.
Yeah.
And Yeah, I'm surprised. So we just went on about how Kentucky, like, they can't compete because they got all these, even though they have this talent, they got all these one and done guys who haven't played enough with each other or aren't, you know, they can't compete with guys who have been there longer in college than they have. But Florida Atlantic, they returned 12 guys. They returned basically their entire roster, and they actually looked worse this year than last year. That doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah, they moved from the Conference USA to the American Athletic Conference, but they went from a one-bid league to what would have been a one-bid league if they didn't lose the Temple and actually won their conference tournament. So I don't think that that's really that seismic of a shift. It's something that we've seen the past few years now, because North Carolina go on a crazy run, everyone buys into them, and then they just had a disastrous season.
Right,
UCLA
yeah.
the year before, and they still end up as a 4 seed in the tournament, but they made that crazy run to the Final Four as an 11 seed. They were the number two team
in
the country. Right. Well, they were the number two team in the country to start the season, and they were never a number two team in the country. Like they were just overranked because people buy into a couple weeks in March as opposed to a full body of work. And as like you said, Florida Atlantic had an impressive run, but it was also had some asterisk to it in the sense that they just barely won the first round, beat a 16 seed, and then it's had a nice Sweet 16 weekend. So
It still doesn't I agree that maybe certainly myself overrated what they, you know, their run from last year, but they kind of sucked in the regular season where they had nine losses. And I don't know, that it just amazes me that they had all their guys come back, you thinking that they're going to be even more motivated, and it's not that much of a drastic change in conference or regular season play, but they end up being a lot worse than what they were last year.
Yeah, well, they had as many top 10 wins as quad four losses this year. It's like at their highs they were an awesome basketball team, at their lows they were just another team. So
kind of like Kentucky.
Yeah, right. I say Kentucky had a very interesting season, very up and down, and it's not surprising that it's a 3 seed that lost in the first round of the tournament. So yeah. Florida Atlantic is an 8 seed that just kind of felt right, but as much as people complain about it, but yeah, obviously a disappointing showing against Northwestern. So and yeah, another 8-9 matchup that I got wrong.
I mean, you don't need to ask me if I got that one wrong.
Right. So I guess I would say Illinois. I think Duquesne was a nice story. I didn't believe in their chances at all against BYU, but I definitely am a fan of them. The Pittsburgh thing certainly helps there. But
I can't believe that was another one that surprised me in terms of like that specific matchup. Or just Duquesne playing anybody.
Yeah, right.
I'm surprised they won.
Yeah, they were definitely overseeded as an 11, but BYU didn't show up. It took them way too long to get going in that game, and every time they would retake the lead, Duquesne just went on another run. So huge win for them. Did you see the Robert Healy professor who he emailed his students, classes canceled, go celebrate? He just went viral all weekend. Definitely had his 15 minutes of fame. But it's one of those things where I look at it, I'm like, yes, this is cool, I love this. He's a sports information professor, and he's the only one who's doing something like this. I think more colleges should really buy into the idea of, oh, your team wins in March Madness, let the students have fun. It's a once in a lifetime moment for them, especially at Duquesne, who hadn't won a tournament game since 1969.
I totally agree. Yeah, I'm surprised it doesn't happen more often.
Yeah, so cool for him, cool for Duquesne, and then obviously Illinois was just way too much for them. That wasn't even competitive. One of several blowouts, and that's kind of what happens when you have the upset in the first round, and then that team goes up against an actually good team in the second round, just not even competitive.
Maybe that's a little bit of a disappointment from the first weekend, is that there were a lot of blowouts.
Yes,
maybe.
Right. Maybe I think that's probably more so than the upsets, is just how many blowouts there were. I guess just along those lines, Duke over James Madison. Coming into this tournament, I bought into Wisconsin, even though I told myself I shouldn't. And that just made this game just so much worse for me, because it's like, how did Wisconsin lose? They just didn't show up. Another team that was just completely unprepared. And it leads to a 38-point standalone loss in primetime Sunday afternoon. And of course, it's Duke that wins, which is why I'm even saltier about it. But
I'm not surprised by it, but at the same time, Wisconsin, they did beat Purdue in the Big Ten tournament.
Right, they were awesome in the Big Ten tournament.
Even though that's not the same team we saw in the past with when they were making their runs in the Final Four with Kaminsky and Decker in 14 and 15 years, it's still a team to look out for. But yeah, that it doesn't totally surprise me. But man, just you go out and you beat Purdue in the Big Ten tournament, you almost win the Big Ten tournament, and then you just lose to James Madison, who, even though they're really good, good for their standards, it's still like kind of a disappointment. I get that.
Yeah, right. Because Wisconsin was so good to start the year, then they just completely fell apart in February, and then they get hot when it seemingly matters the most in the Big Ten tournament, and it just makes me feel like an idiot. Then they show up, they could barely score 20 points in the first half. So JMU, of course, good 12 seed. They only have four losses after Sunday's game this season, but that was one of those where I'm just like, I told myself for a month, pick against this team, and then I pick them to go to the Sweet 16, and they lose in really bad fashion in the first round. So Houston Duke, though, I think that'll be that's an exciting Sweet 16 matchup. That's really one way you can certainly look at that. Houston barely survived A&M, very good overtime game, but you end up with
we might get chaos in these rounds.
Right, I think 2019 kind of had that, because 2019, all of the favorites made it to the Sweet 16, and then you ended up with so many games that were all over the place, a few big upsets. Obviously, Virginia ended up winning it all as a one seed, but that was kind of an all over the place, like, oh, Sweet 16 and Elite Eight and Final Four was when you really got the chaos that we were missing in the first two rounds.
Yeah, so I could see the chaos actually happening more in these upcoming rounds than since... Again, outside of Kentucky and Auburn, a lot of chalk.
Right.
Hit.
Yeah, I mean, and NC State is the only 11 seed, and they're in the ACC. Like, they won that crazy run, and they're keeping it going. So, DJ Burns is a fun story. I like the Jack Golke story better, but I know people love Burns. Just a giant guy.
I kind of hate that Colorado lost to Marquette, because we could have had Burns versus Lampkin.
Right.
talk about two guys that don't have the prototypical NBA body.
No. And
that matchup would have been so fun to watch.
Yeah, well, and Marquette is another team that, coming to the tournament, I had my doubts about him because of the Tyler Kolek injury. He's healthy, and he's playing like one of the best point guards in the country. So they're definitely a scary team. Just one of so many teams that's still alive that can still win a national championship. So I think that's really the cool thing, is just looking at it, just knowing how many good games we're about to have. A few other thoughts: Gonzaga rolling past Kansas. Bill Self already thinking ahead to next year.
Already thinking about next season.
Yeah, which I don't blame him. When you lose,
when you lose your best player.
Yeah.
Yeah, when McCullough is out,
right,
done, and then Hunter Dickinson is just out there not 100%.
Yep.
Even though he's giving his all. Yeah, when your two of your best players are not healthy whatsoever, like, I get it.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact that they beat Samford, it's not like some miracle. They're definitely more talented. Even
they easily could have lost. Like, that was just an egregious foul call where it was clearly all ball on the block.
That was like Louisville, Michigan, all over again.
Yeah,
the all ball.
Right.
Block.
That was very disappointing. So I'm glad that karma kind of showed up on Saturday with that blowout loss to Gonzaga. But
yeah.
Duck Hodges, Samford alum, was very upset about that.
That's funny. I will say, one thing that I changed my mind on in my main bracket and other brackets is that, I always like to go after the sexy pick of the school that goes, 29-3, and not as competitive conferences, like McNeese.
Yeah,
I gotta tell you, after seeing that schedule, I was out.
I was out after that schedule. Yeah, it turns out Gonzaga's...
I've just seen that, like, all right, like, this is a joke.
They're a little better than biblical studies, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Like, that's when I'm like, all right, like, they're screwed.
Yeah.
I'm out.
Right. I bought into McNeese at first, and as soon as I saw the schedule, I was like, yeah, I'm leaning on Gonzaga here. And then it felt so satisfying. They blew them out the way they did, just start to finish, because that game was like the ultimate ball knower versus someone who's just filling out a bracket trying to pick the 12-5 upset, and the ball knowers won. So Which really, it was look at Magnesia's schedule and know that they're not built for this. So
yeah, even I couldn't go after that.
Right.
I was out after seeing that schedule.
Yeah, I say my two main brackets are split on Purdue, Gonzaga, and while I think Gonzaga making the Sweet 16, great run, Mark Few, what he's been able to do there, just every year, like they're seemingly underseeded or overseeded, and no one believes in them. They in this case, they're a 5 seed and they're in the Sweet 16 where they're not supposed to be as a 5 seed, and it happens every year with them. Purdue looks really good right now. Like, Zach Edey, as frustrating as he can be to watch, especially with all the fouling, he's a really good basketball player. And if Purdue could score 106 points, I know it was against Utah State, I have to take them seriously at this point. Like, that was a much-needed opening weekend for that team.
You mean you don't think he's only good because of his height?
I don't think he's only good because of his height, yes. I know. It's easy to hate on Purdue, but I'm going to be kind of real about that team and what they're capable of doing, what he is capable of doing as a basketball player.
I love how his coach stood up for him.
Yeah, right. Oh, Matt Painter, he got asked basically in a press conference before the game. It was like, hey, so you're probably going to beat Utah State. Like, how are you preparing for this game knowing you're going to win? He's like, are you kidding me? Like, this is the NCAA tournament. Every team here is good. What kind of a question is that? And then he went out and beat them by 40. So yeah, good
that's
for
a
him.
Good answer to, especially if you're a team that lost to a 16 seed.
Right, right.
A bad 16 seed, too.
Yeah, Purdue is the last team that should feel confident that they're going to win an NCAA tournament game, no matter the opponent.
Yeah.
So, Midwest region. So that South Carolina-Oregon game was tough for me. The Oregon-Creighton game was tough for you. After that first game, I definitely thought, like, oh, man, like, Brian might have actually nailed this one. But that...
Yeah, and they were winning. They had that game, and Dante kind of owned them on the boards.
Yeah, oh, he was great.
And they were winning, and then all of a sudden... kind of like FAU, once Creighton had the ball and tied, it's like, all right, here we go again.
Yep.
And by the time it got to double overtime, Oregon was out of gas.
Right.
They could barely do anything.
Yeah, it was like a 15-0 run to start double overtime for Creighton. Yeah. So, yeah. Baylor Schuylerman's a great player. I think he didn't really show up against Akron early, and that led to that one getting a little dicey. They pulled that out. I definitely like Creighton's chances of advancing. I guess the one comment I'll say about South Carolina, Oregon, Gamecocks had a great season. Definitely fun. All the upsets, just out of nowhere. You're picked to finish last, and you go, 27-6 or something like that. I get the KenPom, the luckiest team in the tournament, whatever. I see that now. Ultimately, the most painful thing, though, is when your former player, Jermaine Cousinard, scores 40 on you. That's
Cousinard,
a tough way to lose.
Cousinard killed it in those two games, even though one of them was in a losing effort. Him and Dante kind of... They straight up carried the team, especially versus Creighton, where there was a point where they scored, I don't know how many straight points, where like
right,
30,
they had,
40.
They had all of the team's points, basically. It was crazy. So
yeah. Even though it was so impressive watching those two guys, especially Cousinard, I kind of thought to myself, like, all right, like they're not going to make a Final Four if it's just going to be a two-man show while the other guys are literally doing nothing.
Right. It'll eventually catch up to them. And
yeah.
It's double.
It would have been nice for them to beat Creighton, but whatever.
Yeah. Well, so now the next storyline, Creighton's going up against Tennessee. Virginia, the domino effect there. And we'll see if it rubs off on Tennessee, because they scored 14 points in the first half against Colorado State. Colorado State only scored 11 in the first half against Texas, and Texas only scored 19 in the first half against Tennessee. So we'll see if that continues in the next weekend. But Tennessee,
for them to win that game, the way they shot the ball.
Right, 3 for 25 from three.
Yeah, that should give them confidence that, wow, we sucked that bad behind the arc and we still won. That would give me confidence that, all right, hey, if we can shoot a little bit better and play a little bit better offensively, then that'd give me confidence.
Right, because that's the kind of game that Tennessee normally loses.
That should have lost.
Right,
yeah.
So the fact that they actually won it, I agree, it should give them confidence that they can actually go on a run here. Their fans are definitely like, yeah, like that was a big win for us, even though it was close. You almost lost to a good Texas team. Max
Yeah,
Azmus,
good, not great Texans.
Yeah, right. They're a 7 seed. They have some guys that you know that like Domo guy or whatever. Like they have a Rodney Terry has been pretty successful there. But yeah, I mean for Tennessee, this is the true test because they make the Sweet 16 often. They don't make the Elite Eight often, and they've never made the Final Four. So we'll see what they can do there. But I mean that Midwest region, I think a lot of people were thinking chaos. You end up with 1, 2, 3, and 5, and the 5 seed was favored over the 4 seed. Which just the theme of the tournament is just not a whole lot of upsets in that second round. So
No, Saturday it was all
favorites. Yeah, all favorites won Saturday. And
Vegas talked about how we got our ass kicked by the public.
Right.
Because all the favorites won. All the public they won.
Yeah. And of course the one underdog who survived the second round all weekend was Clemson.
Yeah.
So that, which like that just makes it even worse. Like Clemson, the only 6 seed to win, and now they're in the Sweet 16 going up against Arizona.
Yeah, I watched the first half of that game and I didn't, even though I changed the channel back when Baylor really cut it close, mm-hmm. I was watching that game and thinking, Baylor, it's over. Yeah. The way they were shooting the ball, just, you know, clang after clang,
right.
Just missing shot after shot.
When Baylor turned it over at the end of the first half and Clemson went down and hit an off-balance acrobatic three to go up by 10.
Up double digits.
I was like,
all
right,
this is a waste of time.
Yep,
said to myself, Baylor's going to make a run. They're going to make it interesting, and Clemson's going to win the game. And that's exactly what happened. And what kind of pissed me off about the end of that game was, correct me if I'm wrong, I think it was Jacoby Walter at the free throw line, 81% free throw shooter, misses both shots, and then whoever it was on Clemson that took the free throws afterwards, 55% free
and
throw
he
shooter,
makes both of them.
Yeah, like,
right.
That makes perfect sense. Okay.
Yeah, right. It's college basketball.
Because Baylor really could have, they really could have won that game.
Yep.
If they made their free, they were, I think, like 10 for 18 from the free throw line in the second half. Just,
and they lost by 8.
Brutal. Yeah, and just brutal shooting, like free throw shooting, and as well as field goal percentage wise, like they just a million brick shots.
Right, and it's I thought that Baylor was susceptible to a loss. I thought it was being New Mexico State, and New Mexico, they just didn't show up against Clemson. It's just like another one where it's like everyone buys into them in the conference tournament, and then NCAA tournament a week later, they're just not the same team. You're like, what happened? Clemson was reversed. They lost to Boston College. Like, yeah, this team sucks. They have no chance of winning. And they go to
I didn't even give them a chance versus New Mexico.
Yeah, right. They were underdogs as a 6 seed.
Yeah, I didn't take them seriously whatsoever.
Yeah.
Now I got to after winning 2 games that they were underdogs in.
Right. Yeah, and I mean, I'm torn on that one. I'd say
I was gonna say, who are you rooting for in that one?
it sucks. I wish that game was in reverse because first of all, I have a 7 a.m. flight on Friday, so I have to stay up. I'm gonna get like 2 hours of sleep. I wish I could just go to bed after the North Carolina game goes final and just be like, whatever. Assuming they win, just wake up and find out who the opponent is. But
I was gonna say I would just get my sleep.
I might sleep during the game, like during that first game, and then try to take a nap. I don't know what I'm gonna do.
One complaint I have about the tournament, there are too many games that are late. I know it's that it benefits
ridiculous.
The West Coast more than the East Coast, but just for example, on Sunday, we had Marquette and Colorado play at noon.
Yeah.
And then Purdue and Utah State, they played at like 3 something, and that was a blowout, so that was a waste of time. And then the other 6 games are 5 or later, and you have Houston and Texas A&M tip off at like 9:45. I watched because
yeah,
it was an entertaining game,
right.
But I'm like, oh my God, I'm not gonna get any sleep.
I know it sucks,
especially after when it got tied and went into overtime. Like, I gotta
right.
watch
it's
now.
Like, yeah, oh for sure, it was not gonna turn off at that point. Thankfully San Diego State Yale was a blowout, but I mean that game ended after midnight and East Coast time, so
I didn't watch any of that game, but
yeah,
luckily I didn't have to. But still, yeah, I have complaints about that, where it's like, God, you couldn't play another game a little bit earlier than
right. It's
just
then they do that schedule every year. I know. The thing people were really pissed off about Saturday, the early games were in Salt Lake City. You had that Arizona Dayton game.
Right, I noticed that too. What are they playing at, like 10 in the morning?
Yeah, 10:45 a.m. And then Pittsburgh was the last one, so that Creighton Oregon game goes to double overtime and it ends after midnight. local time. It's just
who makes the schedule.
apparently, these are good for TV. That's all that matters. The student athlete, like the colleges, the fans, none of that matters. All that matters is just TV generic people. So, but anyway, I guess let's end it on this. I wasn't sure when it would come up. January, February, Izzo losing to North Carolina. He had me for the first few minutes in that game, and then
I was pumped those first few minutes.
Oh, I'm sure.
it was you know what's crazy? It was 28-16, Michigan State.
Yep.
North Carolina got to 30 first.
Yeah, it was just Michigan State. They went on an 18-0 run. It was just out of nowhere. So there was a TV timeout, and Hubert Davis just yelled at the guys, and they're like, oh, yeah, we are kind of good. Let's go out there and just go on this crazy run. And it's like this game, though, to me, it's kind of what buys me into the Tar Heels and knowing how good they can be, but I'm also prepared for just a devastating loss because of how poorly things can go with this team. Because for every like dominant win, comeback, second half performance, whatever, being in Duke twice in the year, they lose to a team like Syracuse and Georgia Tech. And I'm just like, when is that team going to show up in the NCAA tournament?
It sounds like the Celtics.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like most fans probably feel that way about their teams. You just like remember how bad they can look. But going up against Alabama, they can score 100 on you. North Carolina has a phenomenal defense. I don't know what's really going to win out in this one, but it's their win over Grand Canyon was not necessarily the most impressive win. But
where do those fans come from? They got a great fan base.
Right,
where did they come from?
All the online school.
I thought it was just an online school.
It's everything I hear about Grand Canyon University. It's like this school is just basically just a front to have an NCAA tournament team every year. And
it's 3 hours away from the Grand Canyon.
Right. It's like I think I've read there's like five schools closer to the Grand Canyon than Grand Canyon University is. But I don't know. University of Phoenix was already taken by another online school, so they had to just call themselves.
No, it's great. Like, they filled up a whole commercial flight.
Yeah, it's
just all Grand Canyon fans.
I don't know about that team, but what they had 5 assists in the whole game, just turning it over constantly. No one could dribble. Just a mess. Just not a fun game to watch there. And Alabama ended up pulling it out. So sets up an interesting one with like a top 5 offense against a top 5 defense in the Sweet 16. Probably better than a North Carolina Saint or Grand Canyon game would be, but
yeah, for sure.
Yeah, just hate that it's at 9:39 tip off, which really means it'd be a 10 o'clock.
Oh, it is. Oh,
yeah, on a Thursday night. Yeah,
I'll still watch it.
Right, I'm definitely still gonna watch it, but it's gonna be a struggle for me. So
I've fallen asleep in some of these. That's probably my biggest complaint.
Oh, no, I'm the same way. I've fallen asleep, like, except for Saturday night. I think, I mean, the San Diego State Yale game, if you want to count that. Thursday and Friday night, I didn't make it to the end of
I didn't make it either.
Days.
I missed the Samford, Kansas ending. I missed Drake blowing it versus
right,
2 years
in a
State.
Row.
Yep. Yeah. A couple other ones I can't remember.
Yeah, I missed the St. Mary's Grand Canyon final.
Yep, I missed that one too.
Yeah. Just yeah, I mean it takes a toll on you. You're watching college basketball for 10 hours. By the end of it, you're like, oh, I'll just see the score in the morning. I'm not gonna stay up an extra hour than I'm supposed to.
You know me. I'm fully invested in the tournament, and I start to finish. But by the time it gets to 10 or 11, it's like, man, I've watched 8 hours, 8+ hours, or whatever of this, and other TV shows or movies are on like during commercial breaks, or if there's like not multiple games on, but
right.
It's like, man, like some of the best games are at like really late at night, and I can't stay awake.
Yeah, no, it sucks, and it's like, it would be nice on the West Coast, but then you're starting at 9 a.m. So there's a trade off.
I'll take that.
It's probably better, yeah. But
it's probably better, yeah.
But it's still a long day. It's a 12-hour day, no matter what. 13-hour day in a lot of cases. So, yeah, it's definitely tough, but. You know, the second weekend, I'd say it's a little better, but you're still going to have games go all night, even if they're not happening during the day. You just lose the distraction aspect. Although, we do have MLB opening day on Thursday, so that can keep you.
Oh, yay. My other big complaint about the tournament, and this is the case every year, like the timing of and schedule of these games, what a pro wants.
Oh, yeah, I didn't need to bring a commercial. Like just some every year, like, there's a couple that are like okay, but most commercials are just
now it's just like I got major PTSD where the second I hear or see the commercial, oh, yeah. Where's that remote? Gotta mute the TV, because the second I see Chet Holmgren in SGA, I'm muting the TV. Or if I see that stupid Buffalo with the fundamentals,
oh my God. Yeah, boxing.
That
out.
One's obnoxious.
Yeah, I can't stand that Buffalo Wild Wings Buffalo.
Oh, I think the worst one of all the commercials, don't let me go.
Dude, iPhone, Apple just, so you had the stupid, the wall one where like the outlets were complaining about not charging. Now you got the phone. They just have these R&B songs that are just constantly playing. You're just like, I don't like them at all.
Those three are for sure the worst. The Wendy's one doesn't, probably disagree, but that one doesn't bother me as much, but. The other three.
Some Wendy's ones are pretty brutal, but I mean.
Yeah, like the one that's been playing right now doesn't bother me. The Wendy's one where it's like Bad Boys or
Dude,
Bag
the
Boys.
Bag Boys. I hate that guy. That guy sucks.
I hate that one the most,
right,
for sure.
Right. It's him and Jamie from Progressive, I can't stand either of them. They're both so obnoxious. I say you get a lot of those Progressive commercials where Jamie is like the getaway driver. For the robbery, like that just can't stand
Jamie's,
that guy.
Yeah, I no rebuttal from me.
Yeah, I was also, I wasn't sure if Ian Eagle was going to end up in the Road to the Final Four commercials, but they still suck.
Right, because he's now on the main team.
Jim Nance is still in it. Yeah, him just painting and trying to come up with hobbies and stuff. So, I mean, that's probably the better way to do it. He's a lot more iconic. I assume most people don't even know what Ian Eagle looks like, so.
Yeah.
All right. So, anyway, I think that's it for March Madness first round here. Definitely excited for the Sweet 16. And I hope that if there is chaos, it works in favor of my brackets, so. Which basically just means UConn losing. Yeah, like San Diego State beats UConn. Like, but so, all right, let's talk a little NFL. So, you know, we're getting to the point of the offseason where most of the top free agents have been signed. There's not a whole lot of moves. We're still a little ways away from the draft. We did get a big move happen that I think was kind of expected at some point here. Legarius Sneed going to the Titans. Chiefs traded him after franchise tagging him. He ends up signing a 4-year extension. I mean, Tennessee has made a lot of moves this offseason.
Yeah. I was ready to just not even consider them for next year, but they've made some moves where even though I still will likely have them last heading into next year, I can't just completely write them off, even though I don't like that they got rid of Vrabel, and I don't love Will Levis exactly, and Calvin Ridley's overpaid and so on, but they're making moves. They're trying.
Right. They're assembling talent.
They're making an effort.
I think that it's very similar to the Atlanta Falcons last year, who made a ton of moves in free agency. You're like, oh, this team can be pretty good if they have a quarterback. Turns out they didn't, so we'll see if Tennessee...
I mean, Will Levis is better than Desmond Ritter.
I mean, maybe. I say Desmond Ritter isn't very good. Levis was awesome for the first, what, six quarters?
See, it's not because I love Will Levis. I'm not I'm not really... I just think Desmond just sucks.
Yeah, I say, is Kyler Murray's back up in Arizona now, so...
Yeah. Yeah, so I will say one thing to mention. You know, I've always been... cap is crap or cap is a mid kind of guy. But I will say there have been some moves this offseason where like, oh shit, maybe the cap is kind of a real thing. Because you saw the Dolphins lose multiple offensive linemen to big deals. Yep. And then you saw the Chargers, they got rid of Keenan Allen, Austin Eckler, and Mike Williams. I know all are different situations, but you know what I mean. Like they lost all three of those guys. And then you see the Chiefs, they brought back Chris Jones, but that cost them losing Legarius Sneed.
Right.
And so
the Bills had to cut a ton of players. Like.
Oh, the Bills, yeah. Even though, you know, like Poyer, that part of that's because of age, but they did have to get rid
Tre'Davious
of some guys
White,
too.
Like, he was one. Injury is obviously a big problem there, but he's someone who, you know, he would normally not be released if.
Yeah, so when it comes to Buffalo, part of it's because of age and injuries with some of the moves, but part of it's also because, you know, their cap situation is also not great. So I'll admit, I've. kind of backed off that a little bit.
I just don't understand how the Saints have gotten away with it for as long as they have.
Right.
I mean, I guess part of it is they've been like a middling team for the past few years now since Drew Brees retired, but they were in cap hell for a very long time, and they always found a way out of it.
That's another perfect example of a team and not doing well with the cap either.
Right. Right. So I think really the bigger news, so the NFL owners and coaches all get together. I know everyone loves making fun of that NFL coaches photo with all of them just standing in the sitting in the sun together.
I always try to go through the entire picture and see if I myself, like, remember when the Kelce brothers, or it was Travis Kelce, he was trying to, on their podcast, Travis Kelce was trying to predict who, like,
just
which
identify
guy was which
every
guy.
Coach.
Yeah. Identify which guy was which guy. And some of them, he was like, no idea.
Yeah.
No idea.
Oh, I see.
And he got most of them, but what's funny is that he didn't get the two guys that were on the Eagles. He didn't get either. He didn't get either Shane Steichen
or
Jonathan Gannon.
Oh, Jonathan Gannon. Yeah.
Yeah. He got Sirianni, but he didn't get either of the coordinators, and Jason Kelce was pissed.
That's funny.
So I try to do that myself. There are a couple guys where I'm like, I don't know who that guy is, but.
Right.
Very, very high majority of them you can get.
That's good. Yeah, I say, like, there's definitely some where it's like, they look kind of the same. And, like, it's a zoomed-out photo because you got to fit – they're only 27 for whatever reason, Mike Tomlin.
Yeah, Sean I didn't
Payton,
see Mike Tomlin
Mike
there.
McCarthy. Yeah, right, they didn't make the cut or just didn't show up, had better things to do. I don't know. But anyway, I think the big highlights from these few days, so many rule changes have been announced over the past couple days, so – captured, I think, like the five that have at least led to like breaking news alerts and tweets and stuff. So we can kind of run down the list and just give our thoughts on them. I think probably the most, well, I say maybe the most, it was the most controversial one. We'll see if it still is, was hip drop tackles being banned.
I'm for this being banned. And that doesn't mean that I don't totally disagree with what defensive players have to say about this. Cause I do totally understand where they're coming from, where it's like, how are we going to tackle players on the offensive side of the ball? It's like, we can't hit them in the head now we can't do this, and so how are we going to bring guys down? But there's just way too many guys getting hurt from that specific kind of play to the point where it's like, all right, they gotta remove this kind of type of tackle. So I'm all for it, even though I totally understand where defensive players are coming from.
Yeah, so I'm for it in theory. I think that it makes sense to not have this. My issue is just that we already have so many subjective rules that lead to these like game-changing penalty calls, and I just feel like it's going to be another one that's going to cause a ton of chaos. So
I get it.
That's my concern there. I guess maybe the trade-off here is that they're going to have replay-assisted roughing the passer calls now, which is good, assuming it's not like pass interference in 2019 where it's just useless and is never used correctly.
See, my first thought hearing about this rule change is that, oh, this is actually a good idea because that'll clean up, you know, there'll be less roughing the passers maybe, but then I think to myself, well, maybe this is such a subjective kind of penalty where they're going to replay every single possible roughing the passer that may or may not be one and may not even get it right at the end of the day, where you're just wasting time with replays. Another complaint I forgot to mention with college basketball, as much as I love the tournament, how many replays there are. Oh, it's just, it kills the momentum in the game, and that definitely affects us as viewers.
It makes the games go
like so much
longer.
It makes the games go so much longer, especially at the end of these games where it gets drawn out so long to the point where it's like, who cares? Let's just get back to playing. And that's where I worry about NFL or just replaying any sport, but even especially football, where we're just going to review every single possible play that may or may not have been roughing the passer or not.
So they said it's only going to be on very egregious calls, and I think it's
okay,
more
that's good.
Yeah, I think it's more to overturn them. So I think, but you're still going to have a subjective aspect to it because you're going to be looking to overturn a call on the field that was made subjectively, and it's going to be okay, what really qualifies? You would like to think that some of the ones that everyone complains about are going to get overturned, but we had the whole pass interference thing, and that was just a mess. And I don't know if it's going to be that much better. I think my problem with this, kind of going back to the hip drop tackle, is when you have these subjective calls, every official is going to call it differently. And it just leads to, okay, what can you do? What can't you do? Why is this a penalty, but this isn't? And
it sounds great at first, but then as you think about it more and more, it's like, man, you're putting a lot on the players and the refs to
right.
do things the right way, and it might just create for more chaos.
Right, just more
confusion.
Yeah, more 15-yard penalties. I don't know how many will be picked up. It's all like the whole, you know, eye in the sky thing. It's not necessarily coaches' challenges as far as I'm concerned. I don't know if that's something that will be allowed as well. But I think one that's maybe a little better is intentional grounding. That's one where they can have the replay assists on it, which that I think there are times where intentional grounding is an issue where it's like, okay, how is that not grounding? How are you going to say the receiver in the area? But that's one that I do think is maybe a little clearer to come up with, as long as, you know, that one's at least enforced consistently. I think it's easier to enforce that consistently. Did the ball go past the line of scrimmage? Is there a receiver somewhere in the vicinity? Like, how far do you have to zoom out to see a guy on his team? Is he in the pocket? Is he outside the pocket? So
that's fair.
That's one that I'm like more, I think is going to be better utilized. I think it's going to be more satisfying than the other two. Which I guess also along the lines here is teams are now going to get a third challenge just after getting one challenge correct. Previously, you had to do both of them to earn a third challenge.
I did not know that. So yeah. you can get a third challenge out even if you just get one of them right?
Right, right. You can lose a challenge and you could still end up getting a third, which like, I'm kind of against it.
Just yeah, so I am kind of too.
Like, but it's also basically saying, yeah, like there are times where officials just make such terrible calls that we want to give more opportunities to get bad ones overturned. So just NFL just, I mean, I guess that's the one positive is like there's better chances there. But there are plenty of times where teams just run out of challenges early because there's one really bad call and another controversial one that just doesn't go their way. And now all of a sudden it's halfway through the second quarter and they don't have a challenge available. So
I don't know if I love that one.
See, a lot of people seemingly do.
That just sounds like more and more replay,
right,
more and more time being wasted.
Right. And I think that's really one of the bigger complaints there. So those are the three rule changes that the competition committee came up with. And then I guess NFL owners did their own thing. So the one that's maybe the most controversial instead is the implementation of the XFL-style kickoff rules.
So I heard about this, but you're going to have to tell me. So I don't watch XFL.
Yeah, I don't either. But I've seen,
okay, I was going to ask, like, do you know how that kickoff works?
Yeah, right. I've seen it explained. I've also just seen videos of XFL highlights to kind of, like, really picture it. So basically, okay, the way it works is the kicker will still kick off from his own 35-yard line. His players, though, on his team will be lining up on the opposing, I believe, 40-yard line, 40 and 30, somewhere on the other side of the field. And basically, the whole point is to incentivize kick returns. So there is a landing zone. You have to kick the ball inside the 20-yard line. And if it lands inside the 20-yard line, then the other team has to return it. If it lands,
so even if it lands in the 1 yard line,
yeah, right. And if it lands,
you have to return it,
right? You can't do a fair catch or anything. Obviously, if it goes out of bounds, then you get at the 40. Still, if it lands in the end zone, then the touchback goes out to the 30 instead of the 25. So basically, it's just the idea is that it's going to bring back kickoffs. You're not going to have teams just booming the ball through the end zone.
This one I'm kind of back and forth on, but you know what, I don't want them to get rid of the kickoff entirely. Like, I don't want the league to be okay after the extra point or 2-point conversion, let's just
start at the 25,
just start at the 25 with the other offense and defense. Like, I want the kickoff to still be part of the game, even though in recent years it's really just been the kicker just kicking off in the end zone.
Yeah, I think 2023 had the fewest kick returns in NFL history.
Yeah, because if Devin Hester were playing today, he'd be useless.
right. So I will say, like, at first I was like, I don't know if I necessarily, I care more about the onside kick aspect. So as part of this, you can only onside kick in the fourth quarter if you're losing. But
oh, so Sean Payton wouldn't be a fan of this in the Super Bowl.
Yeah, but also onside kicks, they're not the same as they were back then. The success rate is like 5%.
Way lower now.
It needs to be way higher. So now you're going to at least allow for the running start and everything that'll make it more plausible for the kicking team to actually get a recovery. So
yeah, that's fair.
That I'm happy about.
I think as I think about this more, I think I'm good with these because, yeah, I wish they're, you know, guys like, yeah, Hester, Dante Hall, other guys, they're definitely exciting players. Certainly can question if Hester should be in the Hall of Fame, like we mentioned before, but no, those are guys like that were exciting players to watch because that there was kickoff returns. And
right. Well,
so putting that game, I think the reason why there's been less of that in recent years is because of how many players got injured from those kind of...
Right, that's injuries with a problem, is like the collision, guys running at full speed and hitting people. Yep. Like, we've seen so many terrible injuries. I think one that stands out in the college game, Eric LeGrand of Rutgers, when he had...
Yeah, that
paralyzed.
One always stands out.
Yeah. I think that really started the initiative.
If there's a way to have that play happen more often, kickoff returns, while also making it safer, I don't know if there's a way. If this is
the
way...
Well, that's the idea, is basically the players are all there. You don't have as much of a, you know, full field running down trying to make a play. But I don't know if it leads to more kickoff return touchdowns. I think it maybe leads to more returns. But I almost feel like it's either going to be tackled right away or a touchdown, because you get through, like, past the kicking team when you're only like 30, 40 yards away as opposed to 60 yards away.
I like that the NFL is trying.
I do too. And
I can appreciate that. Even if there are some rules and some rule changes that I haven't agreed with in the past, I like that at least they're trying and trying to make it a better product.
Yeah,
I can appreciate that.
Same. And I mean, I'll say the Steelers at first were anti the rule because they didn't understand it, according to Art Rooney. And then he understood it, voted for it, and then went out and signed Cordarrelle Patterson to return kicks. So taking advantage right away back in the Arthur Smith offense. So, I mean, yeah, let's bring back kickoffs and let's let him only do that. Maybe get a few plays here and there, but I definitely don't need him getting 20 carries and 30 touches a game. So...
I can just see it now. You got Najee and Jalen Warren, and then all of a sudden Patterson's their lead back.
Dude, I can't. I don't want to think about that. Like, I want to think about the positive of having him in the offense, not the negative. And then I guess speaking of the Steelers and rule changes, they propose pushing the trade deadline back a week to week 9 from week 8. I mean, I guess it makes sense, especially an 18-week season. I don't think it's going to lead to an extra flurry of trades, but... You know, maybe you'll have one or two teams that decide to sell by losing 1 week and having the record.
Do you think it should
be
later? Instead of just the middle of the season, do you think it should be a week 13 or 14 kind of thing? Or do you think it's fine in the middle of the season?
I think I would like it probably to be like week 11, I think.
Yeah,
I
would want it later. When I say later, I mean later than week 8 and 9. What if that's 11, 12, mm-hmm. 13, whatever. I would want it later in the year, like November.
Right, because at that point, you know, teams are like, our season is over. Let's try to get some value before.
The other three leagues, they do it in that two-thirds of the way through the season kind of thing. Where
right.
Well,
NHL,
know,
it's like three-quarters of the way through the season. Right. That's crazy how
late
their deadline
you're is. Where you're at a point where you know if you're going to be a buyer or seller.
Right. Right. So,
which I think week 9,
there's only
week
a handful
eight, week
of
nine
teams
is still like, all right, we're in it, we're not in it, I don't know.
Like, right, and then half the teams wind up being sellers. It feels like they just go on and win enough games that it's like, oh man, maybe we should have been buyers this year.
So I it's great that it's another week, but I think it should still be later in the year.
Yeah, I'm curious if it's going to continue to be pushed back. It used to be like week 4 one time, like way back in the day, yeah. So I think part of the issue is also just being able to incorporate players onto new teams because, I don't know, when was the last time there was like a big trade deadline acquisition? I mean, Mecole Hardman obviously caught the game-winning touchdown in the Super Bowl, but that was more just happenstance.
You did absolutely nothing until the Super Bowl, which
right.
is great. Good for him.
It was the biggest
showed the
moment.
Most important game of his career, but it's still like he didn't do anything.
Right.
He didn't do any positives. He did a lot of negatives. He almost cost them the Bills game.
Right. And I feel like there's not a lot of times where you have guys just get plugged in like that coming over in a trade and they're like Pro Bowl caliber players. They're giant difference makers. You never really see that. It's like the NBA buyout market. The last time an NBA buyout player played like significant minutes for an NBA champion was Peja Stojakovic on the 2011 Dallas Mavericks. It's just not a thing.
He was on that team?
Yeah, right. I only know like, that because remember, of that I fact.
I didn't know he was on that team.
Uh-huh. Right, it's, yeah. Yeah.
Remember all those years with the Kings? I didn't know he was on the Mavericks.
Right. He definitely, yeah, he was big on the Kings. He bounced around a little, and he won a ring in Dallas. So good for him.
Wow, I gotta rewatch those highlights. did he play significant minutes?
He played enough to, like, I don't remember what the cutoff was, but yeah, he played enough minutes that it's like he was the last like truly impactful buyout player on an NBA champion.
I remember it was Dirk, of course, and then Jason Kidd, after all those years of the Nets, is on the Mavericks. Sean Marion.
Deshaun Stevenson. Caron Butler.
Tyson Chandler.
Yeah.
I remember a lot of players on that team. I mean, Terry, of course, but I don't remember Stojakovic.
Yeah, I didn't remember Peja being on the team. That was brought up like 7 years later, at least. I was like, oh, interesting. And then the last piece of NFL news. I'm not a huge fan of it. Two games on Christmas Day on a Wednesday.
Oh, I hate it. I hate this one. Wednesday, just because it's a Wednesday.
Right. It's only because it's a Wednesday.
If it was any other day but Tuesday or Wednesday, I'd be fine with it. But because it's actually a Wednesday, I hate it.
Right. Yeah. It just messes with the schedule, and they're just forcing.
I don't care about football on Christmas that much.
No. No, I don't either. Like, even NBA on Christmas, like, I'll watch the Celtics when they'll play. I'll kind of be in tune. Yeah. But I'm not someone who's just constantly sitting on the couch watching all these games. And I will watch NFL with my family if it's a team that we care about. Like, then we're glued to the TV. You know, I'm not going to miss out on rare family time, at least me personally, to watch just a random game that I don't truly care about. So.
No, I mean, it's background noise and
right,
which is, see, I was fine with I'm good with Christmas football on when it was this
Sunday
past
Monday
year. It was a Monday,
right?
So it I'm fine with sense. It when it's like that, mm-hmm. But Wednesday, no, I hate it.
Right, you're just doing it just to mess with the NBA. Just be like, see, we can put football on Christmas Day. It doesn't matter the day of the week. It's also late in the season. Teams are to play the Saturday before, and it's just like they're like, oh, it's like playing Sunday, Thursday. But
yeah, not a fan. And to mess with basketball, is that really the key? Just to have competition. You outperformed them last year.
Right. So fans are going to watch. That's it. They're like, yeah, we know people are going to watch, so we're going to put games on. And it's like, all right. I mean, good for you, I guess.
Another example of the NFL really caring about player safety. Right.
Just prioritizing money and saying it's player safety. Yeah, just ridiculous. I'm not a fan of this, but I'm still going to watch in some capacity. I know that. It's definitely, like you said, it's Neely's background noise. I'll contribute to the ratings even if I'm not fully glued into the game.
The same, but the last two Christmas slates have really been kind of brutal. Because the Christmas in 2022 got freaking Brady sucking against Trace McSorley.
Yes,
and,
yep,
and they barely won that game in overtime. That game sucked.
You had the Russell Wilson against the Rams with Patrick.
Oh, yeah, where they got their ass kicked by 40 points. I think that was Nathaniel Hackett's last game.
It was, yeah. He was fired the next day.
Yeah, and Cam Akers had a monster game in that game.
Yep. Tua got hurt against Green Bay the first game.
Yeah. So that was a brutal Christmas slate. And then this past one wasn't. I mean, yeah, Baltimore, San Francisco was an interesting matchup, but Baltimore destroyed them. And
right. Well, on the flip side, Eagles-Giants was not supposed to be interesting, and that ended up coming down to the wire.
Right.
So, yeah. And they're not going to be able to do as much flexing late in the season because those Saturday games have to be the teams playing on Wednesday. So
yeah, this is what I'm with you in this. This is I'm not a fan of this one.
Right. All it's going to take is like one quarterback injury and you just blow up two primetime slots in week 15 and 16.
Yeah.
So. All right. Anyway, let's kind of get ready to wrap things up here. So I mentioned MLB opening day. I know definitely not feeling high about the Red Sox this year, but there's a big story in baseball right now, and it is involving the biggest star in baseball, Shohei Ohtani. So last week, while the Dodgers were opening the season in front of a bunch of fans in South Korea and no one in the U.S. had any idea it was happening, his interpreter Epe Mezahara was fired by the team after supposedly stealing $4.5 million of his money to cover gambling losses. And this is one of those stories I like. There's a lot of speculation on it. Ultimately, I don't see a scenario where Ohtani gets banned from baseball, but I mean, it's something people are definitely thinking is a possibility here. Like, what is going on? It's just a crazy story of how all of this money was just
taken. There's got to be real concrete evidence to ban a player, especially him.
Right. I mean, the biggest superstar in the whole world.
Yeah. I mean, if you think about it, I mean, this is going to sound crazy, even though it's something you already know. He's the one guy in the entire league that can affect both sides as a pitcher and as a hitter.
Right.
So if he's betting on overs or unders in games that he's in, he has full control over that as a pitcher and as a batter.
Yeah.
If he's taking the over on games or the over on if it's his hitting stats or pitching stats or just the game in general and the score, or the spread, he has full control over it. The one guy on both sides.
Yeah.
So, do I believe Ohtani? I don't know. A lot of speculation. There are certainly guys that believe that he had something to do with it, especially just given the amount of money, $4.5 million.
It's a lot for an interpreter, like to rack up that type
of
debt.
Wouldn't a bank have to sign off on that kind of stuff? It's just
right. I don't understand it a lot. I think so. I've heard a few different things out of this. It's basically a lot of it saying it is very easy for an athlete to not know just how much money they have in their account and not be aware. I mean, when it comes down to it, $4.5 million, as crazy of an amount that is, he makes so much.
It's probably
more than
not. It's not really a lot for someone like him.
Right. Even with all his deferred money, like, he still has so much in endorsements and just money he made with the Angels.
But because he deferred all that money, that brings up an antenna.
Yeah.
You're thinking, okay, now that you hear this story about his possible gambling or, you know, with the interpreter taking all that money, now you're thinking, okay, well, why did he defer all that money? Like, is it because he's got a gambling problem? Maybe.
Maybe. Yeah, say, I don't think he was
betting
on...
You just think about all these things now that the story is out.
It's right,
like,
of course.
Is that why he deferred all this money? And now you think about, like, you know, how much do you really know about the guy? And then you see that he got married and you hear that the players, they had no idea about it until the beginning of the season. And so... He's a very private guy.
It's been a very weird offseason of stories that have come out with him. And it's you're right. He's just a private person. Like, we just kind of assume that every celebrity is going to be front and center with, like, their personal lives. And he announces he gets married.
He wouldn't even give away his dog's name.
Right. Yeah. He announced it by taking a picture with his dogs. Like, hey, I got married to your dog. And then you find out his wife is, like, a star basketball player overseas somewhere. It's just... It's a really strange series of events that have happened here with Shohei Ohtani. And I don't think that anything significant is going to come out of this. I do kind of believe him. But the way that, like, the stories have been changing, I think that's why people are kind of really raising flags. But it's also...
Right.
We hear Epe Mizuhara's story changing. He's the one who said that Ohtani loaned me all this money. And Ohtani's like,
And then you find out he didn't loan him the money, and he supposedly stole the money.
Right. He lied about going to UC Irvine. Apparently that isn't, or at least he didn't graduate from there.
Right.
Yeah. So it's a really weird story. I don't think it's going to get to the point where you're talking like Pete Rose with him, but it is.
I don't think so either, but it's still a story you got to keep your eye on.
Right. Well, that's kind of what it's like with Major League Baseball. It's like the biggest stories that bring together baseball with the rest of the world is cheating and scandals.
When we talk about baseball, the only time I want to talk about it is when I want to shit on the Red Sox or when somebody's in trouble. Or
right.
If the Astros or a player. That's the only time baseball is really catching my attention. Other than that, it's not.
Yeah, and a lot of it is just, there's a lot that goes into it. If the Red Sox were the Dodgers, I think it would be very different, but...
It's just amusing to me, just of all players.
Yeah, right, just
anybody in baseball, it just has to be him.
Yeah,
it's not like in basketball when you got
Jonte Porter.
Jonte Porter betting on the unders on his game when he plays 3 minutes and then he's like, I got poked in the eye. I got to sit out the rest of the game.
Yep. Yeah, right. Let's say that is a much more like controversial story in the sense of like, yeah, like something was really happening here. Like,
something really did happen there. And it's like, you couldn't have been more obvious
right
there. Well, yeah. With Ohtani, you could believe him, you could not.
Right. I mean, it's very he said at this point. I think there's going to be more. It sounds like they're Major League Baseball is very much investigating it. It's like one of those things, though, where I'm like, yeah, I don't like the Dodgers. I don't like, I like the idea of something bad happening to them, but I also don't want baseball to lose Ohtani because he's like the biggest thing in the sport and he makes
by
it
far
interesting. Yeah. So. But yeah, I mean, it's a very weird story. I'm sure there's going to be a lot more that comes out, but it's like great timing right before opening day to have this drop. So, I mean, I guess I think one thing I'll say though is I've seen a lot of people kind of talking about Pete Rose, comparing him. Pete Rose, he posted a video saying, oh, I should have had an interpreter when
I was going to say he should have had an interpreter.
Like, Pete Rose is a loser. People defending Pete Rose, it will never make sense to me. Just people want to be like, oh, you're like gambling is being advertised by Major League Baseball, they should let Pete Rose in the hall. And I don't understand why people go to bat for this guy. I know he was a great baseball player, but he's also an all-time scumbag. And Pete Rose, so the whole story with him, it's like, oh, he only bet on his own team. Well, yeah, at first he didn't bet on baseball, and then oh, he didn't bet on the Reds, and oh, he only bet on them to win. Stop the investigation, I'll take the lifetime ban. We really think that's where it ends. He never bet against them. Just, I think a lot of people just don't understand that story because it was 30 years ago, 35 years ago, a lot of cases before they were born. So they just assume like, no, it wasn't that bad. Let him in because MLB works with DraftKings. So
he probably would be in if he just admitted, if he was a little bit more, I don't know, if he was better about the situation. If he handled it a lot,
right, he handled it very poorly. But yeah. I mean, it's also one of those things where MLB was very serious in 1919 with the Black Sox. If you bet on baseball, you conspire with gamblers, you're kicked out for life. I don't know if someone would turn around and lift the ban, but that would be a very funny move on Rob Manfred's part to just lift Pete Rose's ban so that way Ohtani can't get in trouble. Just say, see, look, it's okay now. It just opened a world of a free for all. Just if you're a good player, you can get away with it.
My favorite nickname I've heard from ever since the Ohtani story happened, showless Jotani.
Oh.
It was from showless Joe
that.
Jackson.
That's clever. Yeah.
That's clever. Yeah.
Nice. Yeah. So anyway,
I don't think the story is gonna go away.
I don't think so either.
But at the same time, I don't know how much crazier it will get.
Right, I think we're going to just hear more and more information. It's going to be like, okay, yeah, this is just, this Ipe guy actually is a problem. Like, we're going to find out more stuff that just kind of gets people on Ohtani's side. But it is certainly something, like, fans will probably use it. You know, it's to an maybe not as bad as, like, the Astros, but I'm sure that opposing fans will find ways to really get riled up about the situation. Mm-hmm. So,
and I guess another thing is, so you heard or saw that press conference, right?
I did, yeah.
Maybe Ohtani's just too nice of a guy, but I'd like to think if someone stole $4.5 million from me, I'd be a little bit more pissed at the
right
at the podium than he was.
Well, again, it's like what $4.5 million for him is.
Like, that's true. $4.5 million to him is like probably like $4 to us. Right.
I think the bigger thing is just being caught up in this and that people are questioning his integrity. Because like at the end, even whether or not he bet on baseball, if he wired $4.5 million to cover a legal gambling fund, get debt, illegal gambling debt. That's illegal. He's committing a crime. So, you know, at that point, it's beyond just Major League Baseball punishing him. So,
definitely still interested. I don't know exactly how I feel or if I believe him or not believe him. I don't know. I don't know how I feel about it.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting story at the very least. You know, it's something to make baseball interesting. And that's what it takes sometimes is just major scandal involving the biggest teams and best players. So,
Good.
All right. So anyway, let's wrap this up and try to see if we can have some predictions that we can tell ourselves, make us good sports prognosticators come October.
I'll give my thoughts on the Red Sox, but everything else, I'll just leave it to you. I don't feel good about the Red Sox at all. Okay,
that's hot takes.
Right. Yeah. After what we thought was gonna be a full throttle of an off season, it's been nothing.
Not at all.
Nothing but or nothing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Nothing. The complete opposite of full throttle, and that comment is going to just play on all year as the Red Sox are sucking all year. It's like, oh, look at this full throttle kind of a year where their biggest signing, Lucas Giolito,
already done.
And it's like, wow, that was a waste. Yep. Not that he was going to be any good, but it's like, wow, our biggest signing all year was a guy that isn't even going to play this year. I kind of wish they'd just trade Devers, which I know sounds crazy, but if it's really just him and a bunch of nobodies, like I don't know, just him here, it's just kind of a waste.
There's some good young. I mean, I kind of get what you're saying. Like I do understand that there's some good young prospects in the lineup, guys like Tristan Casas and Rafaela out there, and Vaughn Grissom. I think acquiring him is kind of intriguing because he was definitely a highly regarded player with Atlanta. But
Jaron Duran, who I hate. It was actually pretty good last year. And my first thought was, okay, well, let's sell high now. I still kind of think that, but at the same time, they don't have much in their outfield.
Right. Yeah. I mean, my expectations are pretty low for the Red Sox. I think that, I mean, I can go through my picks of the AL East. I think Baltimore wins the division again. Last year, I had the Orioles taking a dip, and they ended up winning 100 games. So I said 2024 was their year, so I'm going to pick them to win it again. I got the Yankees and the Blue Jays both making the playoffs as wild cards, with the Red Sox and Rays fighting for fourth place. And
yeah, I think the Red Sox will finish last. I guess I think the biggest storyline with the Red Sox, in my opinion, is this Cora's last year with
right.
the Red Sox.
Yeah,
and I like Cora a lot. I think he's a great manager. I know he had that whole thing with Houston, but I still like Cora a lot. I think he gets a lot out of the players, probably more so in the early years than now. But I just have a feeling that it's just not going to end well here. And if we have another bad season, now that Chaim Bloom's gone, like who's the next guy to blame? Cora would be that next guy. And I don't know if I don't feel good about his chances of being here long term, especially if this is what the team is going to look like.
Yeah, I mean, Craig Breslow comes in as a general manager. You know, if things don't go well, I'm sure he'll want to bring his own manager. So,
yeah,
definitely makes sense. I mean, again, if the Red Sox lose 90 games this year, then, you know, as much as the roster maybe leaves some to be desired, like you can still have an easy way to call out Cora.
This might sound crazy, but I want them to suck. I don't want them to be like
500. Yeah.
I don't want them to be 500 because then they'll because ownership will think, oh, hey, we did things the right way. This actually worked, and it's going to continue to work. No, I want them to actually suck, and then that will push ownership to do better, to make stronger moves.
I would
in
like
the next
to think
off-season.
So. Yeah, but I
at
mean,
the same time, we just saw the. Sorry to cross sports, but at the same time, we just did see the Patriots go 4-13 and then do really nothing but bring in what Antonio Gibson and then just bring back their own guys. So maybe I'm just wrong entirely, no matter how bad they do.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's also just like FSG as an ownership group just has so many eggs spread across so many different baskets that the Red Sox are like, yeah,
the
we
Penguins
did enough with
and golf and Liverpool.
Right.
It's to the point where the Red Sox are just not,
they're not a priority anymore. They won with the Red Sox, but they're like, yeah, we can't get rid of them.
It's no longer a priority.
They said when they bought them that they were going to 20 years and then we're out. I wish that was true. So, yeah, I mean, I'm definitely not feeling high on the Red Sox at all this year. Keep it going. AL Central, Twins, that division sucks. So Red Sox could win the AL Central, but
probably, yeah.
Yeah.
There was a point last year for however long, last place in the AL East was
above,
better than first
yes.
place in the AL Central.
Right.
So that's not, I can't deny that.
Right. I mean, it's a division where I don't really trust any of those teams, but I feel like Minnesota has the highest ceiling.
It's the NFC South of football.
Somebody's
going to
win
baseball.
It. Yeah, somebody's going to win it. So, and in AL West, I'm going to take the the Astros and the Rangers.
That's a hot take.
Yeah, right. But I'm going to say Texas wins the division this year. That's the hot take, is Houston doesn't win the division. So,
but yeah, good for the Rangers. I just remember DeGrom going there. It's like, oh, I'm here to win the World Series. Like, no, you're not. You're here to get paid. And then all of a sudden they actually won without him. Like, oh, right. Shit, maybe he's right.
Yeah.
Or he
yeah,
was
I mean,
right.
It was even though he was not on the team, they still won the World Series. So he got a ring.
And if he's actually there, playing, right. Not hurt.
Yeah, I don't know what his status is. I feel like he might be coming back for the stretch run down the end of the year.
Okay, so he won't be back for...
Because he had Tommy John surgery, right?
You know, I knew that, but I didn't know. And I know it takes a while, but when did he get hurt last year?
It was like June, probably. So.
Okay, so probably All-Star break, maybe.
Yeah, at best. I mean, I feel like it's usually like a year and a half recovery. So
it's at least a year. But yeah, it seems like it goes longer now. Or maybe it's always been that long.
I think it's always been that long. So we might not see him at all. That's probably the best case scenario, is he's back in September, probably. So National League side, the Braves with winning the East, Phillies is a wild card. Phillies probably beat him in the playoffs again, but the Braves are a better regular season team. So that's where we go there. NL Central, I mean, I'll take some time to talk about the Pirates. This division is so wide open. The Cubs last year finished strong, but they're basically running back the same team that won like 84 games. The Reds have a lot of young talent, but they're also dealing with injuries, and their top prospect, Melvin Marte, suspended 80 games for PEDs. The Cardinals were a disaster last year. They tried to fix their rotation by signing a bunch of middling starters. Their best one, Sonny Gray, starting the year on the injured list. So that's not promising.
Sonny Gray's still playing?
He was second in Cy Young in the American League last year. Yeah, he's still going. I feel like
he's really up and down.
Oh, yeah, production. Right. Right, he's all over the place. And then the Brewers traded Corbin Burns. Brandon Woodruff is hurt. He's not pitching this year because of Tommy John. Devin Williams, their closer, is out the whole first half. Their pitching is their biggest strength. So it's a wide-open division. The problem is they're the Pirates. And even if their offense is really good this year, like, I'm sure some disaster is going to strike, like Ohno Cruz shattering his knee the first week of the season. And then the pitching just leaves a lot to be desired, because there's some names in that starting rotation that you're like, how are these guys starting pitchers? So as high as I am on the Pirates, I think it would be way too much of a homer pick to pick them to make the playoffs. I still think they'll be competitive. I'm going to take the Cubs to win the Central, but I mean, this division can really go in a lot of directions, and it's not that much better than the AL Central when it comes down to it. So, and then I'm going to also say the Reds get in as a wild card. As much as their injuries have kind of been a problem, I think that they took a lot of positive steps last year. So
is Ellie De La Cruz, is he going to be I don't want to say breakout, because he broke out last year.
Right.
But
I mean, him and O'Neill Cruz is definitely going to be a rivalry. I think O'Neill Cruz is going to be better when it comes down to it. But I think that the Reds have just a lot more overall talent, and both of those guys, I mean, it would be cool if you end up with like an MVP race of Cruz versus De La Cruz one of these years. But yeah, I mean, his problem is strikeouts and putting the ball in play. But when
he's exciting a player to watch, but then you see the numbers, like, oh, his average,
like,
is
hit
only
like 198. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, God, you got to get on base more.
Right. So that's a concern there. And then finally, NL West, another hot take. The Dodgers won the division. And
oof,
yeah,
that's a hot take.
Right. And I'm gonna say the Giants,
especially if Otani's not gonna be playing this year. I'm just
joking,
well,
he's yeah, right. Well, I say he's not gonna be pitching this year at the very
least. Yeah, that is true. He actually isn't pitching. I did know
he's only half playing, so right. Half of Otani, who's still a top five player in the league probably. Yeah. But yeah, they I think the Giants, with their free agency moves, they'll be rewarded with a wild card spot
with
so.
Snell.
Yeah, Snell, Matt Chapman, yeah, Jorge Soler, Young Ho Lee. They made a lot of moves. So, and I guess World Series prediction, said last year that I thought the Orioles were going to be like the Astros, where they'll take a dip and then the next year they make a big improvement. So I'm picking them to win the World Series. And I'm going to say that, like the past couple of years, Atlanta and the Dodgers struggle in the playoffs. It's going to be another team kind of out of nowhere. And I'm going to say it's going to be the Cubs that they beat in the World Series. Just
I'll say,
to be different.
I'll say also Baltimore, but I'll say Philly. Just because
see,
I was tempted
to say the Phillies
team, a team is knocking on the door multiple years in a row where
they're so
lost
close
in the World Series 2 years ago.
You know what? I'm also
should have made the
Baltimore
World Series
Philly
last year.
Yeah, I'm gonna go with the Phillies. They're gonna come in second place again. Just another heartbreaking loss for the Philadelphia sports team.
I'll say the other way around.
Phillies over the Orioles.
Yeah.
Okay. There you go. Maybe we'll have someone root for at the end of
I don't
October
care if they're a division rival. I want to see Baltimore make a run.
They're a good team, good fan base. They deserve it after their bridge collapse. They could use something good this year.
Oh my God. Wait, I shouldn't laugh.
It's a bad thing. Like
it's a bad thing. Yeah.
It happened in the middle of the night, so it definitely could have been much worse. But
But it's
this is
not
crazy. Crazy story.
That's what I mean. Like it's crazy that I hope nothing really bad happened from that. Like I saw the video and it's like
there were cars driving past it right before, and it's like I think that there were some on the bridge. I don't know what the total thing is. They're definitely looking to recover some people, but
all right, that's good.
Yeah, no, it's like a wild story. It's just of course so many conspiracy theories out of it. The ship just lost power. Like that's it. It's just a fluke freak accident.
Jesus.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely not fun. I mean, it's a historic bridge, and it's also like, how did it collapse that easily too? It's just, I think looking, some people have kind of pointed out a lot of the design flaws with it. I don't know if that's just to be expected when a giant cargo ship hits a bridge where it's not supposed to.
So it's gotta be more on the ship than the bridge itself.
I don't know. I mean, it's an older bridge. Like obviously, it's been standing for a while. I don't know. I mean, if a ship hits most
bridges. That
thought
crosses my mind sometimes, crossing
bridges. Some people are afraid of bridges. And I would say, like, after this, I kind of get it.
We could redo top five fears and we just put bridges.
Say, like, I know people who would put bridges in their top five fears. I don't know if it's
I don't blame those people.
Yeah, right. I mean, that shows you. I mean, just how easily it collapsed, I think, tells me like, oh, maybe this is actually not as safe as I tell myself it is.
Right.
So, yeah. Definitely hope things are good for Baltimore. But yeah, I mean, if the Orioles were to win the World Series, like that would be, you know, like the not quite like the Astros.
Baltimore strong.
Not quite to that level, but. You know, that's certainly...
Instead of Boston strong with the marathon, you got Baltimore strong with the bridge.
Right, I mean, the Astros won the World Series right after Hurricane Harvey. It happens.
True, right.
So, but yeah, all right. I'm glad that you at least made a World Series pick to stick to. Do you want to throw in anything else out there other than just Red Sox last
place? Yeah, I got a hot take.
Yeah?
Cora will be done after 2024 with the Red Sox. The Dodgers, like you said, will make the playoffs and choke. And because of that, because of the highest of high expectations, and if they were to lose again and choke in the playoffs again, maybe Dave Roberts is gone, and then Alex Cora goes to
the Dodgers.
Let's do a switch off. But Alex Cora goes to the Dodgers, and in his first year with a new team, just like he did with the Red Sox, the Dodgers win in 2025 instead of this year.
All right,
there you
that's
go.
A,
I got
it's a long
I got my
haul, yeah 18 month prediction there.
I got two World Series predictions. So there you go.
All right, I say that is like the ultimate pessimist Red Sox take. Alex Cora gets fired and immediately wins a World Series elsewhere.
Yeah, the way the Red Sox are right now, it can't get any worse right now. Yes, it can, actually.
It definitely can. I'd say, I mean, that 2012 season was pretty rough, but I mean, obviously
but they
the
were to follow
collapse
that with a World Series the next year.
Right,
so.
Right. So, yeah. Anyway, that'll do it for this one. So, like I said at the top of the show, we're about 50-50 on an episode next week. I'll try my best. It just might be like the end of the week, which is probably not a huge deal. Just being able to talk about the Sweet 16 or Elite Eight and, you know, preview the Final Four before it happens. I think it's still a lot of value in that. And, of course, check me out on Apple Chat, Ocean's 11. So,
I will tune into that.
Yeah. Fun movie. Fun movie.
Definitely a great movie.
Yep. So... For my co-host Brian Wells, I'm Corey Novotny. Thanks, everyone.